Okay, I've shared this idea before in the past, but definitely before you guys were here. But it's a very important idea, and I realized I hadn't said in a few years when I mentioned it to Rabbi Sklar. So one of the look, Nesto has a lot to talk about. As I mentioned to Mayor yesterday, Revi'i is the longest single aliyah in the entire Torah at 55 psukim. And Meir said, oh, is it the repetition of the Nisim's Karbanot? I'm like, no, that's actually not. It's actually Chamishi Shishvi. Revi is Nazir, Sota Nazir, and Birchat Kohanim. But the crime of the Sota is described in a very interesting phrase. And that is, Uma'ala Mal Bi'isha. What does that mean? Ma'ala ma'al, to trans whatever mi'ila means, the isha against her husband, isha meaning with a mapeke, her ish. Now elsewhere in Nasa we have the other mi'ila, which is what you normally talk about as mi'ila, which is what in Shlishi we have this, which is mi'ila in the Beit HaMikdash, misuse of the property of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara in the beginning of the fifth parak mi'ila actually connects them and learns from this, from Mi'ila, and from Sota, and from Mi'ila by Avodah Zarah, right, that Avodah Zarah is described as a form of Mi'ila. The Ein Mi'ila Ela Shinui. Mi'ila is a change, right? It's a change from its normal purpose. It's a fundamental, like metaphysical, ontological misuse of something, right? So if something belongs to the Beit HaMikdash, use it for personal use, that's a shinui, that's fundamentally wrong. That's fundamentally to worship Avodah Zarah is like, in the deepest sense possible, a break, and for a woman to commit adultery is an undermining of that relationship. I mean, obviously, much of the comparison between Sota and Avodah Zarah stems from the organizing metaphor in much of Tanakh of God and the Jewish people's relationship as a married couple, and therefore Avodah Zarah is adultery. But the Maharik has a fascinating comment. And the reason I was talking to Rabbi Sklar about this, because he was doing in his shir the nature of shogeg. What exactly is the nature of intent in sin and accidental intent and Omer Mutter and all those sugyot? And I mentioned to him, Derech Agav, that Marek has a fascinating claim that Sota is different. And he was asked the following question. What if you had a woman who thought that it was permitted to commit adultery? Isha shezanta tachat ba'ala biratzon, v'hi lo yadayim yishi zirbadavar. She committed adultery, she didn't know if it was forbidden. I don't know why she didn't know it was forbidden. She didn't know that it was forbidden. Is she shogeg? And is she forbidden to her husband? So he says, maybe in terms of onesh, she's a shogeg. She said it was mutter. But one of the ramifications of adultery is not just that it carries the death penalty, but that the woman becomes forbidden to her husband. And the Marek says the following fascinating idea. La'aniu da'ati nir'eh de'ein lazu din shogeget la'tira liba'ala. She has no status of shogeg for the purpose of permitting her to her husband. Kevan she mitgavenet limol ma'al bi'isha. Because she still understands and has intent to breach her relationship with her husband, umizaneh tachtav, and commits adultery while married to him. De'aloktiv ish ish titisteh ishto umala mal ba'ashem. The pasuk doesn't say that a woman who commits adultery is transgressing against God. Dilishtameh dafka b'mechavenet l'isor, which would imply she needs to know what's wrong between her and God. Ela umala vo ma'al. It says that she committed transgress against him. So the Marik argues that a riot is different. Because what makes someone a sota is not that she did something usser. It is the undermining of the relationship itself. Right? Not the Isser Shabo. She may not have known that God said it was Usser. But it's the very fact that she did something that is trespass against the relationship that creates the Isser. Once the trust, the loyalty, whatever, has been breached, even if she didn't know it was Usser, that is sufficient to create an Isser. Now, that is a fascinating idea at several levels. First of all, it is fascinating because it explains possibly many of the weird halachot in Masechet Sota. For example, there is a question the Gemara asks at some point whether a woman who had bia derech ivarim with someone else, meaning non-penetrative sex, does that create an Isser Sota? Right? Does create an Isser the husband? And the Gemara says, well, on the one hand, it's not Bia. On the other hand, maybe B'Kpeda de Baal Talia Milta. It depends on the K'Peda de Baal, the fact that the husband cares. But what does that show you? The Gemara is raising the problem, maybe something which is not formally considered adultery is still adultery. Right? It's the way that, you know, lahavdil, it's the way that certain people talk about, you know, like, emotional adultery, right? People who develop relationships with people, right? They like hold themselves back from a sexual relationship, but it becomes intimate emotionally, right? And people feel that to be a breach of the relationship. Or the way, to be fair, people who, you know, catch spouses involved in, I don't know, pornography and things. That also sometimes, right? This is one of those things in smicha, right? You know, they prepare you that if someone comes to you, you're going to understand that even though formally it's not, right? Emotionally, that is the way people feel, right? There's something about the relationship itself, whatever is considered in that context a breach, it is a breach. Now, maybe not formally halachically, right? But it's a the fact that we're even at a hava mina, that something that's not bia could forbid, shows you that it's about the breach of the relationship itself is what creates the irreparable harm to the marriage and forbids the husband to wife. I would just add that if you then bring it back to what I just mentioned to Gemara, that avodah zarah is also compared to mi'ilah. and of course, mi'ilah itself, right, the use of Beit HaMikdash property, what that might highlight is at some level, right, you have to remember that what makes avodah zarah so bad is not that it is usser, but that it is usser because it undermines the relationship with God. And I once heard from Lichtenstein an interesting claim. The Gemara argues that by avodah zarah, non-Jews and Jews are both usser to avodah zarah, but there's a big difference. By non-Jews, to violate avodah zarah, they can only do it what's called kedarka. What's avodah zarah kedarka? What? It's worshiping the avodah zarah in the way that it's normally worshipped. Jews can violate avodah zarah in two ways. Either kedarka, so if it's markolit, then you throw rocks at it. If it's pa'or, then you defecate in front of it. That's kedarka. And then, not kedarka is what? So what if I throw a rock at pa'or? Am I chayiv? No, I'm not. What is not kedarka? Is using the four avodot of the Beit HaMikdash, bowing, nisuch, karbonot, right, etc. If I use that in the context of avodah zarah, even if that's an insult to this avodah zarah doesn't like bowing, right? You're insulting it by bowing. But if you bow, for a Jew it's avodah zarah, for a non-Jew it's not. Why? So Rav Lichtenstein argues it's because of this. Because for a Jew, what makes avodah zarah bad isn't just that you're worshiping avodah zarah. For non-Jews, you can't worship avodah zarah. That's usser. And that's true for Jews and non-Jews. But for Jews, there's a secondary aspect that you're undermining the relationship. And if the Beit HaMikdash, Kilo is our home with God, and these acts are therefore the act of our intimacy with God and the Beit HaMikdash, to use them in the context of avodah zarah, even if it's not formally worship, because, you know, Baal doesn't like bowing. I don't know, right? It's considered an insult. Doesn't matter. You took that which was special between you and God and used it for Dezara, you undermine the relationship. So then, fascinatingly, right, the insight of the Maharik, which is about why telling you that adultery is not about your relationship with God, but then when you realize that same word is also used by Avodah Zarah, you realize that that's true by Avodah Zarah also. That what makes Avodah Zarah usur for Jews is not just that it's bad to worship Avodah Zarah, but that you're undermining a relationship with God. And therefore, something which may not be formally worship of Avodah Zarah is still going to be Avodah Zarah for Jews. Right? And the third factor here, which is very interesting, which again is also in our parsha, is the Yedei Me'ilah. Right? The idea that to use property of the Beit HaMikdash for your own personal thing is also Me'ilah, is also somehow fundamentally a breach of, I don't know, your relationship with God, your relationship with Kedusha. Right? That's a fascinating idea, that it's not just usur. Right? At some level, it's fundamental. It's fundamental. You know, I could suggest ideas, right? It could be, the Yerushalmi says that the reason that Amirato le'gavok misrato le'hediot works, the reason that you don't need a formal kinyan to give something to Kodshim, right, to Kodesh, according to the Yerushalmi, is because Yerushalmi is a cryptic line. Lashem ha'aretz umlo'a. Because God owns the world. Right, the pasuk. What does that have to do with Kodesh? So, again, without getting to all the lumdas, at some level it might be that, listen, why is something Kodesh? Why is it so easy to make something Kodesh? Because really everything in the world belongs to God. It's a chiddush, God lets you use it at all. But therefore, you could look at Kodshim, not just that this is mine and then I make it Kodesh, but that I'm restoring things to the natural state. Right? Then it's a chiddush.
It's not that I'm consecrating, I'm rescinding.
Exactly. Right? It's I'm pulling back, and that's why you don't need a kinyan. Because God owns it. He's letting me use it. But if I say, I don't want it anymore, take back what's yours, then it works automatically. But at some level, right, if that's the case, then misusing something in the Beit HaMikdash is not just, it's not just like stealing, right? I took Josh's book, I used it, Gewalt, right? It's, no, I have now returned something to like its natural state, which is in God's possession. And then I have the chutzpah to use it, right? It's like what the Gemara says by bracha. Right? If you don't say a bracha before you eat, it's if you stole from God. Right? Because again, it's like you're undermining that fundamental recognition with the relationship with the world. It is God's. Right? So it could be that all three of these me'ilas, right, really get at that. I'm not so sure about the third one. The first two I'm very sure about. The third one already you have to think. Right? But to recognize the me'ilah is less about formal isra, but as a breach of relationship that's true both within a spousal relationship and also because of the mashal that organizes our thought about a relationship with God, about a relationship with God, I think is very powerful to think about, especially as Me'ilah and Sota both appear in this parasha, and the Bavli in the fifth parak of Me'ilah really does unite them conceptually and says they're all the same thing. And the end of the day is that one word is shinoi. It's that it's a fundamental change in what it's supposed to be done.